Hey, we are live with
No, hi.
Runic. Hi, Runic.
Hi.
Runic is an Atheist Republic patron. And what are we? So you wanted to talk about some Hindutva reaction outrage when people talk about caste system, right? And then after we, and then you
Yeah.
wanted to show us some examples. And then after we talk about that, then you wanted to go back to the top discussion we were having about some Hindu scripture and some stories,
Yeah.
some mythology. Sounds
Yeah.
exciting. All right, so let's do you want to
This
tell
will be a
people?
continuation of the previous video. So
Yeah.
if you haven't watched the previous video, I mean, you can watch the previous video. Like, it is Hindutva, a Hindu atheist explain something. It is something like that, the title I forgot. So you can watch
Okay.
that. Okay, so
Okay,
I'm
cool.
sharing the screen with you.
Oh, let me bring it up. Oops. Hold on. Add to stream. All right, here it is. It's on the screen. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is visible. So, okay. So, someone in the previous video, I was talking about especially the Devi Mahatmya, which is the text about the goddess, Sanskrit text about the goddess. So, in between, I told one line that about some caste and that Bhagavad Gita and Devi Mahatmya, I mean, in some way, they give some legitimacy to the caste system, or at least they assume an underlying framework of the caste system. Like, it's not like they are promoting caste system, but they assume that the caste is there and it is just there. It's a natural thing. Like, they
Right.
assume that.
Kind of like the Quran, where that doesn't say, "Hey, slavery is okay," but it just refer,
But
or the Bible,
it
or the
assumes that
Bible.
slavery is just there and it's natural. It doesn't
Yes.
talk. I mean, it doesn't see
Right.
it as a problem, in fact.
It doesn't see it as a problem. It talks about it as if it's a natural order of things.
It's
It doesn't say,
it talks
it
about
doesn't
the
say,
perfect
like the Bible
nature.
or the Quran, they don't say like, "Hey, slavery is great," but they just, they don't condemn it, and they talk about it as if it's not. So you're saying basically Hindu scripture also talks about casteism as if it's a natural order of things. Okay, so that's what you were saying. And what did the comment section say? Okay, show us.
So first of all, he was saying this person is there. He's saying that he is faking nonsense.
Okay,
So
so
some people.
let's just clarify. This is an Atheist Republic video, and this is you. And we'll go up. Let's look at the video. Let's go up, go up. Scroll up. Oh yeah, sorry, all the way up. Never mind. Yeah, just go up, go up. Oh yeah, so this is a video of you and me on Atheist Republic, and this is somebody commenting about you mentioning that. Okay, let's go. Let's see the comments. Sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to see. I just wanted to give people some context. Where do you go? Right, here it is.
So
Okay,
he's
okay.
taking nonsense. Okay, so someone replies, idiots always lecture on something he doesn't know, so don't give importance to the things that doesn't matter to you. Let them talk whatever they like. Okay, it makes some sense at least. In every channel, an Indian becomes wise on religion, but in reality, he's frustrated. Okay, let's. Then I asked, who is faking? So just I asked. Then he is
Oh,
saying, this is just another.
the green one is you. Yeah.
So this
Okay.
one is a regular troller, I understood later on. This is just another takiya. I don't know what does this word mean. I mean, when it comes to Islam or Christianity, these guys quote verses, but when it comes to Hinduism, they talk BS. There is no hard work required to tell lies. So if you are the same Ronak Bhatra as in the video, then you have zero knowledge of India or Hinduism. Okay. So then I say, okay, tell me where I was wrong. So he says, you were wrong in almost everything you said. Okay, let's start in chronological order. 240, you said caste system is a part of religious text. Dude, Varna system and caste system are to separate things. I mean, I have been listening this since like many days. Like, Varna and caste are to separate things. But in reality, I mean, I don't know. Like, what is the basis of that argument even? And then, to show me where caste
Wait,
system
can
is
you
mentioned.
explain what is Varna system? What is Varna? You don't have to go to the. Oh, yeah, go
Okay, so
on.
in Varna system, see, in the Puranic scriptures, there is a Varna system, or even sometimes it is mentioned as jati. So there are four different categories of people. There is Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. So it is even the caste duties are mentioned in many Puranic and, I mean, other kind of scriptures, that the Brahmins are supposed to like read the religious scriptures and perform religious things and all. The Kshatriyas are, I mean, supposed to be kings and warriors and perform battles and all. And then comes the Vaishyas. They are the tradesmen. They do involving trading activities, agricultural activities, etc. And there are the Shudras who serve all the three castes, all the three other castes. Okay, they
And
are
then there's the
like
outcast, and
servant
then
and
there's
all.
servant, and then there's the
No. The
outcast.
Puranic, the Puranic
The
scriptures don't talk about them.
don't talk about that. Okay. And
This is a later like period.
that's the Verna?
Yes,
That's
that
called
is
the
a
Verna?
Varna.
So how is that? That sounds like a caste system. How do people say that's separate from caste system?
And the point is that when you talk about the modern caste system, still these four categories are there. These four still get, I mean, just that the scriptures don't say that essentially the caste system is birth on the basis of birth. They don't explicitly say that, but it doesn't mean that, I mean, we are not sure whether it is on the basis of birth or on the basis of occupation. And even if it is on the basis of occupation, how does it justify that? I mean, that doctors should be treated separately, then engineers should be treated separately, they can't sit together. I mean, though it doesn't say that, I mean, there is no untouchability and all these things, but okay. And untouchability and all these things also are there in some later scriptures, actually. I mean, it is there in some other scriptures where they say that, okay, like people who eat beef and all these are actually, I mean, in some form, I mean, impure or something like that. They become the outcasts and all. I mean, this is there in the Manusmriti and all, which texts are actually burned regularly in India. So no one considers them seriously nowadays anyway, but still. And that's why I think the, I mean, you sometimes say like, suppose the Muslim, you say, no, the Muslim is like a race in India. And I understand I can connect with this. Like, suppose, for example, like even the persons who are not bigoted, like, for example, my parents, suppose I showed like, okay, I'm going to have a call with him. And my mother is like, oh, he's so handsome. I mean, he's handsome because he's a Muslim. I'm like, but he's now an ex-Muslim. But no, he is a Muslim. For my mother, you are not an ex-Muslim criticizing Islam. You are a Muslim criticizing Islam, because Muslim is like itself a race or something, and Muslim people are handsome, and because I mean, Muslim is like an Arabic or Persian identity that is itself becomes a Muslim or something.
I heard that they keep telling me that they tell me that being Muslim is in your DNA. Once a Muslim, always a Muslim.
Yeah. So for Indians, the Muslim is like a Turkish, Iranian, and Arabic ancestry itself is like Muslim ancestry. Like that is the identity of Muslim, basically. And so moreover, especially eating beef is another thing which they identify Muslims with. So if Muslims are born in a community where beef is being eaten, then they are impure, because beef eating is impure. So how does this
relate to the relationship between the Varna and the caste system? How does this relate to each other?
Yeah, because Muslims also come in the category of Dalits in that sense, because Muslims are also untouchables in some sense, because you can't touch, like if my grandparents and my grandparents, they would not go to a Muslim household and eat food with them.
They will
consider it impure to eat food with a Muslim or share food with a Muslim or even give permission to a Muslim to enter into the house, because that will be considered something which is not very pure or something like that.
Okay, but going back to the Varna, the argument in favor of that is like...
Yeah, but Varna doesn't include this untouchability. Okay, Varna doesn't include this untouchability. It is just talking about four different categories of people who are doing different kinds of jobs. It is not considering any like untouchability.
And they say, to defend that, they say that that's not based on heritage. That's based on merit.
They don't explicitly say anything about that. They just say that these are the duties of these categories of people. But how are these categories meant to be? Like, is it on the basis of birthright, or is it on the basis of, I mean, just merit or something? We don't know. But we don't know means, I mean, in many of the, like in the main scriptures, it is not told. I'm not sure about which scripture tells this. But in the main scriptures that Bhagavad Gita and all, it doesn't explicitly say like whether it is on the basis of birthright or anything.
So these Varnas, how old they are?
These are much old. I mean, these are around 2000 years old or even earlier. But modern genetic studies shows that endogamy means the process of like restricting marriage to specific groups, like specific group can marry within itself. This process starts around 2000 years ago. This is modern genetic studies show that. So it is assumed that even if the caste system had older roots, but it became like a based on birth system, and you can't marry outside your caste. These things developed 2000 years ago.
So I think that part developed 2000 years ago, right?
Yeah, but the system may be existing earlier, but earlier it may be on the basis of occupation and not on the basis of birth.
Right.
But later on, it became like a.
So I'm gonna say this, and you tell me if this is a fair depiction of what's happened. Okay, so. We know based on some of the oldest texts, right, that whatever the caste system is today, even though it might have been different originally, it started based on some of the oldest Hindu texts, maybe in a different form, but it is rooted in some of the earliest Hindu texts, okay? We don't know how much exactly what it was based on heritage, but we know that it was rooted, like, even if you go to the oldest text, there was something that is close to what we have as caste system today, right? Yeah.
Now, see,
and even let me finish this, and you tell me if this is fair. And later on, even though it was still a long time ago, like around 2,000 years ago, whatever that original form of it was, like the Verno or whatever, it turned into at least it's been at least 2,000 years that it turned into something that is closer to the caste system today, which is based on heritage, based on blood, right? Not based on merit. And that thing, it turned into that long time ago enough for us to be able to say that the caste system based on heritage is canon in Hinduism, right? It's part of it, like it tied very well into Hinduism. Is that fair description?
Yeah. Now there is again, I want to say something here. Like for some people, even in the comments, I can see for some people, Hinduism is like, they want a very monolithic structure of Hinduism, like Islam and Christianity. They despise Islam and Christianity, but on the other hand, they get inspired from them so much. They want a monolithic structure for Islam, I mean, Hinduism, like, okay, Hinduism is only what is given in the Bhagavad Gita or in one text, in Sanskrit text. But I think Hinduism is not like all the traditions. I mean, when I said about animal sacrifices, they are like, oh, these are tribal traditions. This is not Hinduism. Tribal tradition is also Hinduism because tribes are within India. Anything that happens within India is Hinduism. Like, that is my definition. I mean, this is the academic definition of Hinduism, that it is an umbrella term for all the traditions existing within Hinduism. It is not necessary that it is there in some Sanskrit text written thousands of years ago, and then only it is Hinduism. It's not like that. It can be a very recent thing, but if it is in the culture, then it is Hinduism. It's a part of Hinduism.
It's very interesting because the people who want to defend Hinduism, first, when you... they say Hinduism is many things. It's not just one, like, it's not one thing,
yeah,
like,
yeah, Christianity. Yeah, yeah.
And then when you say, like, okay, this is, I have a problem with this in Hinduism, and they say, oh, this is not Hinduism. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
you said, like, you cannot say this is not Hinduism, and Hinduism is so many different things at the same time. If this is not Hinduism, then there's a core thing that is Hinduism. And if it's a core thing that is Hinduism, then what are the fundamental things that makes something Hinduism? And if there is no fundamental thing and it's like fluid, then what I'm criticizing as part of Hinduism, then it's part of Hinduism, because you just told me that many things could be part of Hinduism. So like they want to have their cake and eat it too. It's weird. Yeah.
And another thing is that, like, suppose in the earlier video I talked about Gita Govinda, a text which is like a 10th or 11th century text, which was written, I mean, it is about Radha and Krishna, the love between them. And I shared some, a bit like erotic verses from that text. And some people are like, oh, don't mislead the people. Gita Govinda is not a scripture for Hindus and all. I'm like, okay. See, in Hinduism, there is no like authentic, yes, there are authentic scriptures, like, this is like a titular, like we say Vedas are the authentic scriptures. But in reality, this is not the case. How many Hindus know what is there in the Vedas? I think 90% or 99% of the Hindus don't even know what is the content of the Vedas. They don't know. Mm-hmm. For them, like a local bhajan, that is devotional song, which was written maybe 100 years ago, or even a song of the Bollywood, a devotional song from the Bollywood, makes more sense than a song from the Vedas. So, So though titular, like, it is like the Queen of England, so it is like a titular position, Vedas are the authentic scriptures. But in reality, there is no authentic scripture in Hinduism. Everything is authentic. There is no like Sahih, Galat, and all these things are not there.
But even in religions, that there is something called authentic and non-authentic and part canon and non-canon. Yeah. People don't know the Quran or know the Bible. That's very similar. Like, that part is very similar with Christianity and Islam. How many Muslims do you think have read the Quran?
Yeah, many Muslims don't know the Quran, I know. But the point is that still they give a whole lot of importance on the Quran. But many sects of Hinduism don't give importance on the reading. I mean, this is just like nominal. They will say that the Vedas are great, but they don't give an importance on the reading of the Vedas. Like in ritual processes in our homes, the Bhagavad Gita may be studied, or maybe the Devi Mahatmya, that the text we were discussing in the last episode also, that text is, recited in pujas or worshipings. The Vedas are not recited many of the times. I'm not saying they are not at all recited, but they are not recited always.
Yeah, but even when they're recited, people don't know what they're talking about. Like the Quran recited is recited all the time. Do you want to respond to Katie?
He's saying something I disagree with so much with this. I didn't understand. Modern borders of India is younger than the term Hinduism. What does it mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I just said, you know.
Modern Borders of India is younger than the term. Okay, I mean, I'm saying like any traditions within India. Okay. So, I mean, he's saying that the modern borders of India. So, anything that exists within the Indian subcontinent. Okay, so it may also be like South Asia also. Like it may be in the South Asia, Thailand, Sri Lanka, anything that is also a part of Hinduism.
So, you're saying any ideology. Yeah. I don't know if I like your idea, your definition, because let me challenge it, okay? You're saying that anything... Okay, I'm hearing so much echo. Is there any way you could reduce my volume? No?
I can't reduce your volume, by the way.
My volume, not your volume. Reduce my volume. Yeah, okay? Yeah. So you're saying, I've actually heard this definition before. You're saying any ideas that come out of India subcontinent, that's technically Hinduism? Any?
Yeah, but... I mean, see, these terms are not defined. I mean, first of all, for the Hinduism term was coined by Raja Ram Mohan Roy for the first time. And he defined it that way. Like, it was the original definition. Okay, whatever Indian traditions are there, except Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism, because these are like organized religions, I mean, in some sense. So, apart from that, whatever exists, that is Hinduism.
So, the atheist, anti-religious, and materialist philosophers of India... Who hated?
Yeah, many people consider them part of Hinduism, but
you can't steal it. Those are our people. You can't take them.
Yeah, but many people consider them like there are many naturalistic philosophies growing out of India. They consider it part of Hinduism, definitely. Like there is a Charvak philosophy, Ajivika philosophy, Buddhist and Jain philosophy also. I consider them part of Hinduism in some sense because they are like Indian traditions. I call it Indianism more like it. I mean, I don't know how to define that.
Kate is saying I would call that cultural appropriation. Oh my yes, God. You're culturally appropriating atheism.
No, it is not. I mean, actually, yeah. I will share a verse with you, Rig Veda from also. Okay, okay.
Wait, is Kama...
Let us first talk about the comment, okay?
Okay.
We can argue about the definition of Hinduism, but that does it even matter much? I mean, I don't know. I mean, something which is there in the Indian culture is Hinduism for me. Anyway. Okay, so where I was, like, if you are the same, okay, tell me where I was wrong. And then he says that caste system is not a part, dude, Varna system and all these, and don't give me Shakespeare to quote Christianity. What does it mean even? What I mean by that quote, divine literature like Bhagavad Gita's or Vedas, okay? You are simply a fool who doesn't know anything about Hinduism or Hindu calendar. Let me ask you a simple question. What was the age of Ram when he died? This is a response to some other person. Okay, so I can give you many quotes. Now I'm responding to him. I can give you many quotes, but you will say that the words Varna, Jati don't mean caste. Tell me what's the Sanskrit word for it. But still let me give you one. Okay, so Mam hi partha vyapashritye pi syuha papa yonaha. Striyo vaishyas tatha shudras tepi yanti param gatim. So this verse actually means that, let me translate a bit for you. It means that, even if that person is of sinful birth, like the vaishyas, shudras or women, still, if they give up to me, then they will also know the ultimate reality. They will also get to the ultimate reality or spiritual enlightenment or whatever, like some sense of that. So I can just exactly translation is not possible here. So it is talking about a spiritual equality. It is saying that everyone is equal in terms of like attaining spiritual enlightenment. Everyone can attain spiritual enlightenment, but... Mm. It is assuming that when Vaishyas and Shudras are of sinful birth. That is the problem I have.
Wait, can you say that again? But you got cut for a second. But what?
But it is assuming that the women, Vaishyas and Shudras are of sinful birth.
Oh, they're of sinful birth?
Yeah, the word used is papa yonayaha. It means papa yonayaha means from sinful vagina. So it means that one who is born of a sinful womb or vagina or something. So basically sinful birth. Okay. So why are they saying that being a woman is a sinful birth? I'm not sure. Maybe now some people will say that they're referring to social discrimination and all. So that can be one interpretation anyway. But okay, the woman, discrimination exists. Else, that is what I want to say.
Who else is born of sinful birth? Women and who else?
Vaishyas and Shudras. The two Varnas. the lower two varnas apart from Brahmins and Kshatriyas.
The lower castes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. You have to say the English version. Okay, cool. All right, let's go. Okay. Okay, so you brought, and where what text was that? That was in the Vedas?
No, it was in Bhagavad Gita.
The Gita. Ooh, okay, okay. All right,
so continue. Now the Gita here is like, let me say, now the Gita, and the translation is given by an Indian Swami, Swami Tejo Mayananda. So this is, you, they can't say that this is a, propaganda translation by, what can I say, some kind of, I mean, some English person or something. So because this is by a traditional religious person, this translation. Anyway, now the Gita here is not promoting discrimination, but is rather talking about spiritual equality. But it can't be denied that there is an underlying assumption that women, Shudras and Vaishyas are of sinful birth. Even if Shudra and Vaishya are based on labor division, how justified is it to assume that some professions along with women are of sinful birth? These are excellent things as well. There are excellent things as well as somewhat problematic things in scriptures. I try to take the good and also acknowledge the problem so that we may correct it. So I said that. Now he is again saying me, Takiya and half knowledge both are dangerous. So basically there is no refutation of what I said. So he is saying Takiya and half knowledge. So that is the Hindutva. Okay.
So they don't. Do you know what Takiya means? Do you know what Takiya means?
No, I'm not sure what it means. What it means.
Okay, Tariya is like, he's accusing you of Tariya. So he's accusing that you're a secret Muslim that is lying.
Oh, acha.
Because lying is, he's saying that lying is part of Islamic tradition as a way to like attack. And he's accusing you of being a secret Muslim that is trying to destroy Hinduism.
Okay, that's so anyone who criticizes Hinduism, and so their idea is a binary. So Hindu and Muslim. So someone who is not, I mean, someone who is not appreciating everything about, I mean, even not everything, like someone who is just finding a flaw in some idea, he's a Muslim. Like, what kind of idea is
and
that?
Everybody so they can, hate Muslims.
I can actually show you. So someone who thinks I'm a secret Muslim, I can show you my, the worshipping place in my house. Let me show you the worshipping place in my house. Don't do some offensive thing
This is all taqiyah. Yeah. This is all taqiyah.
This is the worshipping place in my house. My mother has given these flowers and all.
I don't believe you. Secret Muslim. You're secret. This is all lie. Yeah. This is all a lie. you prepared all. This is all part of your taqiyah. You're a secret Muslim.
Yeah.
No, but this is how binary they think. You either love Hinduism or you.
And in fact, caste system has been criticized by many Hindu religious gurus also. Some Hindu religious gurus supported it, but some Hindu traditional gurus actually talked severely against caste system. They have talked about caste system. I mean, they talked against caste system. Actually.
No, they're all of them. They're all secret Muslims. Okay, we're going. This is so much
so
fun.
Now he is telling this, people like you do one or the other. The verse you quoted is when Krishna was explaining bhakti yoga. Since you seem to know that varna means occupation and you claim that you have read Gita, you should know that Brahmin jnana yoga applies for kshatriya karma yoga, for women and employees and farmers, vaishya and shudra. Only bhakti yoga is applicable. So in the Bhagavad Gita there are different chapters. So Gyan Yoga means the chapter of knowledge. Okay, so they are saying that the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, they should the Brahmin should actually read the Gyan Yoga, the chapter of knowledge, and for Kshatriyas the chapter of action, that is the Karma Yoga, and the Bhakti, that is the devotion, the chapter of devotion, it is for the women and the lower castes. Okay. So that is the Vaishyas and Shudras. Okay, so there is no discrimination, basically, he is saying. So, but I mean, even if I say that this is labor-based division and the chapters are different, but why they're assuming someone to be of sinful birth and why women are included? Why is knowledge not for women? I mean, what kind of thing is that? I don't know.
Right.
Then he is again explaining, a Brahmin or a Kshatriya won't be a Brahmin or a Kshatriya.
They kind of sound like a whole bunch of like bigots in Western societies who say like, you know what, you are like inferior and we're going to still treat you nicely, but just accept that you're inferior. You know what I mean? Like they're like, they, you know, just because
I mean, this guy said that he is a Dalit, actually. I don't know. I mean, this guy later on said that he is from a Dalit community, but says no, that Hinduism doesn't.
That's taqiyya on his part. He's lying. He's trying to make it believable. He's okay. Saying taqiyya.
Now he is saying that a Brahmin or a Kshatriya. So actually, I mean, I'm not reading the whole comment. He's saying that a Brahmin or a Kshatriya is by the kind of activities they do. So since Brahmins, do this religious things and read religious scriptures, so they actually go with the knowledge, okay, worship knowledge. So for them, the Gyan Yoga is there, and that is a chapter of knowledge. So if they don't do that and they start doing devotion, then they are actually not Brahmins, actually. And so for the Kshatriya, the Karma Yoga is there, the chapter of action is there. So if they don't do it, actually, they are not the Kshatriya, so they are something else. So basically, he is going with this again, the labor-based division and all these things. Okay, have you understood it?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so he's trying to excuse it as something that is not. He's trying to say this is not caste. This is something else. It's not based on. It's not discrimination. It's just It's just categorizing people based on labor. He's trying to apologize.
Yeah, but my question is why the. The main question is why are women being included with that? Women can't be a labor-based division, right?
That's a very good point. Because
women can't be a labor-based division. Why are women included with the lower caste? Like, but I mean, you are saying doctors. Engineers and women. I mean, does it make sense? Like, obviously, this is something based on birth. Like, it is very clear from that.
So he's trying to do Islamic reformists who try to do gymnastic argument to say like, oh, it's not slave; they're servants, and it's just like, there's contract, and these are basically just the same as employee at the time. They try to make slave in the Quran mean something else. Like that's how the Muslim reformers try to like. Misrepresent what the Quran is actually saying, trying to make it seem like every time the Quran is saying slave, they actually mean like there's contract involved, these are employees or something like that. And these are doing the same thing, but you caught them because they're saying this is not caste, this is not discrimination, this is just a division of labor. But in these categories, they include women. And like you're saying, if this is division of labor, what division of labor is woman? Right? So that's okay, good. You got them. All right, let's continue.
So now he is saying that now let me quote the full words. You mischievously quoted only half the words in translated form. First of all, I didn't quote the words only in the translated form. I quoted the original words and I read it out. And another thing is half the words in and I didn't quote half the words. I completed the full words. And you excluded the part that everyone gets moksha if they do bhakti yoga. I said that thing. I mean, when did I miss that out? And then again, he's quoting the same words. He is not quoting anything extra. You see, he's quoting the same thing again. I mean, he's not quoting anything extra. And then he says something like English transliteration and all he provides. And then finally, he translates it as, all those who take refuge in me, whatever their birth, race, sex, or caste, even those whom society scorns, will attain the supreme destination. So it is like an interpretation. I mean, I don't know who exactly gave this translation, but whoever gave this translation, this is more like an interpretation and not the exact word-by-word translation, okay? So they are saying the translation is like, okay, everyone, irrespective of caste, race, sex, gender, everyone will get me by doing devotion. So it's like a very, like, how can I say, interpreting the thing. Oh, what is the main idea behind that verse? Maybe I can say that, okay, this may be the idea behind that verse, but this is not the word-to-word translation of that verse. Okay. So again, share the screen. Okay, so then they are saying again something, and then he's saying that I'm a Dalit by caste, but Brahmin by my knowledge. Then your translation is wrong. Again and again, they are saying translation is wrong. Okay, so this is another guy. He's saying translation is wrong. Again, he's providing that. And now he is that the word which is sinful vajaya, that sinful birth, he is translating now as, I don't know where from he is getting the translation. He said that this means even those who are sex addicts. I mean, because the word is sinful vagina, so they took it as sex addicts. But this is not what religious scholars say. Most of the religious scholars will not translate the word papa yonaya as sex addicts. Okay, so this is just like, so then he
I like the name sinful vagina. I want to open a bar or a club and call it sinful vagina. sinful vagina.
Okay,
no, yeah, go on.
So do you
oh my god. All right, so again
he's so, asking me, do you know
so
Sanskrit
innocent.
Or
go ahead. I'm sorry, go
so
ahead.
Do you know Sanskrit or just blabbering? Okay, so he says that. So now for them, again, I want to clarify one thing. For Hindutva, knowing Sanskrit is like authority over Hinduism. Like Sanskrit is the language. This is very much like Islam and Christianity. Like, okay, there is Hebrew and I mean, not Christianity. Christianity don't focus much on language, but especially Islam, which focuses much on the Arabic. But Hinduism also focuses on Sanskrit. I know Hinduism has importance for Sanskrit, but there is local literature also. There are local literature and everyone doesn't need to know the Sanskrit to be a Hindu or something. Just talk about Hinduism. I mean, I don't know. I mean, why they are so much like, do you know Sanskrit? How dare you talk about Hinduism without knowing Sanskrit? Like, I don't know. I mean, what kind of ideology is
this? This is very interesting. Again, let me, everything you're saying, it's so comparable to Islam. And it's funny because these people keep saying like, oh, Armin, you think like you're thinking about Hinduism with your Abrahamic background and that's why you don't understand it. But then everything, the more I learn about them, the more I realize how similar they are to Islam, okay? And the arguments that Muslims make. Because a lot of Muslims tell you, like, if you agree with them, like, they have a lot of scholars that don't speak, like, only 20% of Muslims speak Arabic, right? Most Muslims don't speak Arabic, right? That's not their language. But if you agree with their position, it doesn't matter if you don't speak Arabic. They congratulate you, they celebrate you, they call you an intellectual. But as soon as you disagree with them, they're like, well, you don't even speak Arabic, right? So how could you know? You have to read the text in the original Arabic form. And then even if you don't speak Arabic and you show that the scholars that speak Arabic agree with you, that's not good enough. You have to speak the original language.
And if you speak the original language, they will say that you are doing some propaganda and actually you don't know.
So even after, like, sometimes they're like, oh, you don't speak Arabic, so you can't know. And then somebody's like, well, actually, I am an ex-Muslim Arab speaker. And then they keep moving the goalposts. But yeah, but they're very similar. But go on. Yeah.
But this is like true for him. I mean, I will say especially Hindutva. For, I mean, normal Hindu people, this outrage is not much there. Okay, so I mean, I don't know, but I think that.
That's not very common. You're saying this is like unique, not very common argument.
No. This is what you are saying. This is very true for Hindutva movement and the very certain section of the society who are this Hindu nationalism idea is there. But this is not true for each and every Hindus. Like for general Hindus, this may not be true. Okay. So they are not much focused on whether you speak. I mean, they have importance on Sanskrit, but still they are not so angry all the time. Like, okay, so they don't get offended with so this kind of offending movement and boycott, this kind of movement is not.
It's more of a Hindutva thing, you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So then they are going on saying, do you know Sanskrit? So then I said them that I don't know Sanskrit, but I can understand some of the words and I can clearly say the translation you are using is more like an interpretation than a word-to-word translation. Moreover, the translation I gave isn't my translation, it's by a religious scholar. So then they are not actually highlighting, I mean, they are not answering my points that I raised. They are just blabbering nonsense. Like, I don't mind any translation as long as the verse is translated completely in English. What do they mean? Like, I also translated it completely. Copy paste the link of the translation you are using. If it is wrong, I will correct you. It is a shame that you have started the name calling after. What name calling did I do?
What the hell?
It is a shame that you started name calling. He name called me Takiya and that was there, half knowledge and etc. It is a shame that name calling after getting exposed on the very first point you made within 3 minutes into the video. I don't have a problem. Then I'm just explaining it again and again. Then they are saying some nonsense thing and I don't want to go to that. Okay. Then he's saying me, then the religious scholar is wrong. What?
Yeah.
I mean, if the translation doesn't agree with you, then the religious scholar is wrong. What kind of thing is that? Then
again, very similar to Muslim. Again, guys, this is so similar with Muslims. Okay, like a lot. Like, so you read the Quran, you don't agree with me, you didn't read it in Arabic. Oh, you did read it. You did read it in Arabic. Well, you're not a scholar. Oh, you found scholars. Let me finish this. Okay, this is how the steps work. Okay, you say that. Let me go from the beginning again. Okay, so you read this Quran. You read the Quran. You disagree with me. Okay, you didn't read it in the original Arabic. So that's why you're wrong. Oh, you did understand it in Arabic, or you found somebody that speaks Arabic that has the same interpretation, well, you're not that person, or you are not, is not a scholar. You have to actually look at scholars. Or you actually found a scholar that speaks Arabic and that agrees with your position. Well, no, that scholar is wrong. The scholars that I tell you that are, if the scholar disagrees with my position, then that's not the right scholar that you have to go to. Again, these are the steps that they take. It's very similar. But Katie, can you respond to Katie here?
I agree that regular Hindu people are not this outrageous, and they would still be upset and call you immoral. I mean, yeah, they call, I mean, for what they will call you immoral, like, it depends on, like, yeah. I mean, yes, anyone doesn't get, I mean, if you show now this sexy Kali, suppose, if you just come and show it to some regular Hindu, I mean, obviously they won't like it. I mean, definitely they won't like it. But, yeah, but will they go to file an FIR against you? Like, I don't know. This I don't. Obviously, they won't like it. Like, if you show this to my parents also, they won't like it. But will they take the step of, like, going to some FIR and, I mean, all these kind of, like, boycott?
Talking about FIR, you're filing a police report against me. That's what you're saying, FIR, right?
Yeah, first information report. So, they're filing cases against the person, harassing that person online, bullying. Right. I mean, obviously, they won't do that. I'm talking about that. I'm not saying that they won't be offended, but that.
Right.
I mean, I can get offended with anything. Like, that's a different issue. If someone, someone makes some homophobic joke, I may get offended with that. Like, why are you, demeaning the LGBTQ community? But does that mean that I will go and file cases against them, like, and then I will harass them online? I mean, that is not necessary, right? I mean, someone has the right to be homophobic.
So it sounds, sounds like you're agreeing with Katie.
I'm agreeing with Katie. They're not that outrageous, but yes, they will, I mean, they will not like it, but they're not outrageous.
Cool.
So then they are saying something like, you can show me any, so again and again, they are making the same point that the caste system is not there. I mean, they are not. Then I've shared the links also, which are very reputed sites, like government sites, actually, government websites of the texts. I'm sharing these links there. These translations are given. And then they're saying something. Okay. Then and then it goes on, and then and like this, it goes on back and forth, like Sanskrit and all this. In between, he told that you are misguiding the audience. And finally, the final comment. And then he was saying that you haven't read the Gita. So I said that I had read the Gita when I was a child, again when I was a teenager, again when I became an adult. And I mean, how am I assuming that I haven't read the Gita? I don't know. Like, and then finally, like, yes, see, finally it comes to, after all this discussion, it comes to these things. Fine, you are free not to consider Bhagavad Gita as the word. No, like, it comes to another thing. It
the
was
word
there.
Of God. He said, you're
all
free
I'm
to...
saying is that the Bhagavad. See, all I'm saying is that the Bhagavad Gita, being the word of God, simply cannot be unfair to the devotee. So everything comes to considering the Bhagavad Gita to be a word of God, as that is not the nature of God. So that this is not a logical explanation. If it seems so, then I have see if my interpretation is correct. I don't know.
This is so crazy. No. Wait. This is so Islamic and Christian. This is so Abrahamic. Wait, so the Bible cannot be wrong.
Yeah.
Why cannot the Bible be wrong? Because it's the word of God. Why?
Yeah,
how do you know there
is
a
word of God? Yeah.
Yes, it's so similar.
Yeah, and
oh my God.
They accuse others of Abrahamic lens. Okay. So now it goes on and on. I mean, after some more discussion, finally it comes to this one. There is nothing wrong with the caste system. The problem is only with humans. So consider one caste superior to the other. Each soul takes rebirth to experience the world in a different way. Some want to experience it intellectually, some physically. Now, if I have come here to sing and dance and play, how can you force my soul to go and study? I mean, the end of the discussion happens at the justification of the caste system. I mean, this is so ridiculous. Like, it started with, no, caste system doesn't exist. It ends with, no, caste system is not wrong. I mean,
wow.
This is itself so ridiculous.
The mask slips.
I find that so hypocritical. I mean, the discussion starts with caste system is not there, and then it ends with caste system is not wrong. So anyway,
when you corner them into a position,
so
they have to admit it. Go on.
Now we will go to the, okay, so now let us continue. So now let us continue. We have 20 minutes time. So we will continue to the story. Wait. Of. So do you remember the story?
Yeah.
The Hindus, so the Hindus people are so similar to the people they hate and find disgusting. Yeah, exactly.
So, can you give us a short summary? Like really short summary of where we are with the story? Story time.
Okay, so do you remember anything? So from the last that I said, there is a text called Devi Mahatmya. So it has three sections, Madhu Kaitava Vadha, Mahishasura Vadha, and Shumbha Nishumbha Vadha. So we discussed the first two parts in the previous video. So do you remember what happens in the first part, Madhu Kaitava Vadha?
No, you have to remind me. I'm sorry. These names are so hard to remember.
So in the Madhu Kaitava Vadha, what happens that Vishnu was sleeping and it is a summary. So Vishnu was sleeping and some demons pop out from the ear dirt of Vishnu, and since Vishnu was sleeping, he was just sleeping, so Brahma got afraid. I mean, they are going to attack him, so he started praising the sleep goddess, the Yoga Nidra, that is the sleep goddess or sleep, so to come out of Vishnu so that Vishnu can awake and kill the demons, and hence the sleep goddess responds to her, to his prayer, and withdraws herself from Vishnu. And then Vishnu, wakes up and kills the demons. So in this sense, and then Brahma could only create the universe. So basically, the Yoga Maya, Yoga Nidra, that is the sleep goddess, acts as a prime mover. So, I mean, she doesn't kill the demons directly, but she acts as the prime mover. So, and the next part is the Mahishasura Vadha.
I don't know why this reminds me of Adventure Time with the time guy sleeping and having to dream the universe or something like that. I don't know. There's an episode in Adventure Time exactly like this. But go.
So some people interpret it as like, so the world, I mean, makes sense to you only when you wake up. Your consciousness makes sense of the world. So this is the metaphorical interpretation. If you are sleeping, the world doesn't exist. When you wake up, the world is created. And so then the next part is the Mahishasura, the Gita. Yeah. So Devi Mahatmya is one of the same level as the Gita for most of the Bengali Hindus. Yeah, exactly. So it is recited in the worshipping places many of the times. It is recited. So the Mahishasura Vadha is the second part of the story, where what happens that Mahishasura is an asura. He captures the land of the devas, the Swarga Loka, that is the heavens. And what happens, he just turns them away. And what happens is that they all gather together, and their fury, the fury of all of them, the enrage, everything comes together, and the bright light comes together, and this forms a goddess-like figure. And that goddess then finally fights with Mahishasura and kills him. So Mahishasura is a shape-shifting demon. He shifts to different animals time and again, and finally finally the goddess is able to kill him. So this is again an interesting thing. Like in this story, in the original story, there is no mention of any boon that Mahishasura gets. Mahishasura just captures the demons, the goddess kills Mahishasura. Okay, so this is a very plain story. But in the popular culture, when they show it in TVs or just like oral stories, when they say, they will add another thing with the story. That Mahishasura, by doing some penance and all, got a boon that no man can kill him and only a woman can kill him. Boon. A boon. Do you know what is a boon means? B-O-O-N.
Huh?
You know, like blessings, boon.
Oh, okay. I had to look it up. Okay. Wait. How do you spell it again?
Boon is like a, like, so boon is like something you get. I mean, how can I say? I mean, you ask for something from the gods, and the gods give you something that is a boon. Okay.
Okay. All right.
So after doing some penance and all, he gets a boon so that he can't be killed by a man. So he should be killed by a woman only. And finally, the woman is created. Okay. So this story actually justifies in some sense, it seems like the power of a woman. On the other hand, they're also justifying like why the gods can't kill him, like the gods are powerful, but why they can't kill him themselves, like why the goddess is required in the first place. So in a patriarchal society, that needs to be justified, and hence they are making up additional parts to justify that.
This is like the Wonder Woman movie where when they made Wonder Woman as a weapon against the god of war, right?
Yeah, yeah. Such a theme is also there in Lord of the Rings. Such a theme is also there in the Lord of the Rings, because there was a woman who killed a shadow monster kind of thing. Yeah. So we will talk about the third part.
Go on.
It's the opposite of curse, yeah. So Shumbha Nishumbha is So the third part is Shumbha Nishumbha Vadha. So again, the same thing happens. Shumbha Nishumbha are two brothers. They capture the land of the Devas. The Devas are turned out. They go to the Himalaya mountains and they start worshipping the goddess. As I have told in the earlier video, that the goddess who resides in the form of intelligence, sleep, hunger, etc., like abstract qualities among all human beings, that goddess, we worship that goddess to come to our rescue. So it is like an abstract goddess, okay, abstract concept. So now the Parvati is a, literally means woman of the mountains. So she is passing by, okay? So to bathe in the waters of the Ganga, and she asks, like, who are you worshipping? So, and at that time, from her body, a bright light comes out, okay, and separates out, and that takes the form of another goddess, that is the Kaushiki. So she is fair complexioned, and she is Kaushiki. And the original Parvati becomes dark complexioned, so she is the Kalika. So that is the black goddess, okay? So the Kalika goes to the mountains and stays there, okay? So she is the benevolent Kali, okay? So she is the smiling Kali or benevolent Kali that you see, okay, sometimes. So that I think the inspiration comes from there, the benevolent Kali. So she goes and sits on the top of the mountain, the dark Kalika. There is Parvati, basically. Now the Kaushiki that comes out, yeah. So Kaushiki goes and like she is just sitting at some place, and Chanda and Munda, these are two asuras who are like
asura. Asura means demons, right?
It in that sense. It doesn't exactly mean demons, but you can take it in that sense. It is a rivalry of the Devas. Okay, so these are two groups. So the Chanda and Munda are enamored to see Kaushiki's beauty. So they just go and see Kaushiki, and they are enamored, and they say that, and they go to Shumbha and Nishumbha and say that, oh, you Shumbha and Nishumbha, see, you possess everything, you possess the heavens and everything. So you should possess that lady also. She is also like a jewel, so you should possess her. Okay. So I mean, why is she still not possessed? And then Shumbha and Nishumbha send a messenger to messenger called Sugriva to Kaushiki. And he goes and asks her, like, okay, I mean, Shumbha and Nishumbha are asking you to marry one of them. So she says that, okay, but I have a vow. I have already taken a vow that I will marry only the one who has defeated me in battle. So, I mean, they say, like, what are you talking about? Like, but they say that, oh, I know that, I mean, but what to do? I have taken already this bow. Tell them, tell your masters, like Shumbha Nishumbha, that I have already taken this bow. So Shumbha Nishumbha, after hearing this, get enraged. And then they sent a asura called Dhumra Lochana with all his armies and all to bring Kaushiki, the goddess, distressed and dragged by hair. Like, I mean, if she doesn't agree to marry, then just drag her by hair and bring her. So, wait, and see wait. The word again and again, they're saying the word like possessing her and all. So this is like very, like in modern rendition again, they will say that Shumbha and Nishumbha went and asked Parvati, like, will they marry her? And Parvati just got enraged and then fought with them and just killed them. This is the modern oral retelling of the story, or in the television shows also. Like, this is actually somehow wrong, because this is the crime of Shumbha and Nishumbha is not that they wanted to marry Parvati. This is not the crime for which they were killed. I mean, they will be killed at the end. So, and I mean, some people called you also Shumbha Nishumbha, like, oh, Shumbha Nishumbha also told that Kali is sexy, so they faced the wrath of the goddess. But the point here is that they wanted to possess her. They wanted to treat her like a slave or some kind. Like, they wanted to drag her by hair and possess her. And I mean, that is a different thing. Okay, so that is not exactly like marrying.
Is this scripture justifying rape? Can you say that?
No, it is not justifying. It is condemning. It is condemning the thing.
Wait, so I don't understand. Who was that? Oh, okay. Oh, the asuras were trying to do that.
Asuras are trying to do that to her, but she kills. She finally ends up killing them because they tried to do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Sorry, I lost the plot for a second. It was getting too many elements. We need a chart. You need to have like a chart, like visuals. So I have the Asuras on one side, the Devas on one side. Because there's so many names, I keep like losing like who's who in the story. I was like, who are the good? So the bad guys were trying to so who are the demons? This Asuras are demons, and Parvati is the goddess, so, the good person.
For your convenience, I will say that. Okay, for your convenience, I will say Asuras is demons. Then okay. If you can't remember the name. but there are specific names of the Asuras also, like Dhumra, Lochana and all these.
Okay, good.
So then the...
why did they change the story? Then why did they change the story in the modern... This is a good story. The Asuras were trying to rape a Hindu goddess, and she destroyed them. So why do they keep that story? That's like a positive message. I also assume this is bad because you said they changed it.
No. They changed it because they want to make it more sensitive. Like just asking some girl to marry, or just asking to, I mean, just getting sexually attracted to a woman itself becomes a crime. Like I'm saying, the offense becomes a bit lesser.
All right.
Like not the attempt at dragging her by hair and possessing her, but just finding her sexually attractive becomes a crime. So that is
why. I finally get it. I thought that this must be justifying rape if they're changing the story and they're trying to not to be embarrassed. They're making just a mere attraction to a goddess. They're trying to make that as an evil thing that deserves her killing them, not just them trying to rape her, but just the fact that they even consider. Wait, what these modern renditions? Like, how recent are these changes? Because it must be very recent, because Hinduism...
In a popular culture, in TV channels and all, I think in the TV channel, another reason can be that they don't want to show the violence and all these things, like because the children are watching them and they don't want to show this, like all these violent dialogues, like drag her by hair and all these like violent things, like I want to possess her and all this. So that's why they tone down it a little bit, maybe. That may be another reason, I don't know. These are in popular culture, like TVs and all, comics for children.
Okay, so that's very sex negative. They're just against sexuality as a whole, just finding a goddess attractive.
I can understand that for children, they are, removing these things, but still, like, it imbibes in the mind a kind of sex negativity in some sense. I mean, because you are turning a sexual violence into just a sexual attraction. That is what they're doing.
By the way, if people in the live chat keep commenting things that are not relevant to what we're saying, I'm gonna block you guys, okay? Hossein, Hamid, anybody else? If you're not like if you keep distracting me, part of the reason why I keep missing your points is because I'm getting distracted by irrelevant points in the live chat, okay? So I will remove you guys. Katie is asking good questions.
Does Ronak agree that Durga Puja is so much fun because even though it still has religious significance, it is mostly secular festival in Bengal? I think so.
See?
It is so much fun. It is a secular festival. I mean, everyone enjoys. Everyone just goes out in the puja pandals. This is called pandal hopping. Like they go to each pandal to see the decorations, to see the how the goddess is adorned with jewelries and sari, and I mean how the idol is. I mean, sometimes there are 13 themes in the idol. Like this is a very artistic thing in Bengal that happens. Like this year, there was an idol which was made, like Durga was imagined in the form of a migrant laborer mother. Okay, so there was a migrant laborer woman who is carrying her child in her hand, and she was having like this 10 hands. So it is like, and with her, there are two daughters also. So it is like very creative art we get to see in the pandals of Bengal when we go to Durga Puja. It's not like religious, I mean, completely religious. It is like a whole lot of things out there.
Let me just speak to the people who are speaking Persian in the channel. Guys, don't speak Persian on this channel. We have Jomhuriya Bi Khodayan. If you want to speak Farsi, we already have a channel for that. That's go and find Jomhuriya Bi Khodayan. That's where I speak Farsi. This channel is only English, okay? Please don't distract me with your Persian stuff. Okay, but go on.
Okay, so now she goes and Dhumra Lochana. So we were at... okay. So yes. Thank you, Kitty. Okay. So Shumha Nishumha... Uh, Okay, so Dhumralochana.
Don't worry, don't worry.
Dhumralochana is the name of the Asura. Okay, so Dhumralochana is the Asura that was sent initially. So he goes and says that, okay, I have to take you. I mean, will you come willingly or we should take you dragging by here? So she says that, okay, I'm a lone woman. What can I do? Do whatever you want. So as he approaches, like the goddess makes a sound like, oh, sound, something like that. And Dhumralochan gets reduced to dust with that sound. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the lion of the goddess, with the goddess, there is a lion, pet lion. So that goes and kills all the army of whatever the army was. Then next, Shumbha Nishumbha sent Chandamunda, then said that, okay, so if she is not agreeing, first wound her and then drag her by here and bring to us and bind her, drag her, bind her, and then bring to us and wound her if it is necessary, if she's not agreeing. Then they go and try to do the same. Then from her forehead with the fury, the Kali comes, dark skinned, goddess comes out. So that is the furious Kali. So there was the one Kali who remained in the Himalaya mountains, that is the benevolent Kali. And another Kali comes in the battlefield out of the forehead, that is the furious Kali. So there are two different Kalis. So this Kali, what she does, so here are certain things she held in his hand. So sword, noose, skull-topped stuff, garland of skulls, tiger skin, gaping mouth, tongue lolling out, red eyes. These are the descriptions. So she is lolling out the tongue, and then like that she's wearing a tiger skin, garland of skulls, and having all these kind of skull topped stuff and all these things. She's a terrible, she's very fierce.
So there's two Kellys?
She's very fierce. Yeah. They're the same, but like there are two forms of the one. One Kali is the one who comes out in the battlefield, and another Kali is one who remains in the mountain after the bright-skinned goddess comes out of her. So as I told in the beginning of the story, so she remains in the mountain, Parvati Kali.
Do you think it's kind of correct me if I'm wrong. So the light-skinned goddesses are benevolent and the dark-skinned goddesses are aggressive?
I told the reverse thing, actually.
Oh, wait. No, you said Kali. Isn't Kali... Okay. The one in Himalaya...
No. Initially, there was a goddess. Initially, there was a dark-skinned goddess. From her, a fair-skinned goddess comes. She was benevolent, the dark-skinned one. She remains at the top of the mountain. Yeah, okay. The fair-skinned goddess comes. And from that fair-skinned, another dark-skinned goddess comes. She is the angry one. So it's like Inception. Oh. Dark, fair, dark.
Okay, so it's, like it could be whether you're dark or light, it doesn't matter. You could either be benevolent.
Here the dark and fair may be indicating some metaphorical themes. I'm not sure. So the goddess is also in power.
What does it represent? There is a Sanskrit
word. It represents, yes, the dark always represents something bad, but it is actually represent the three gunas in Sanskrit. So this is called the Sattva, Raja, and Tama guna. Sattva is the like the pure. Guna means like a kind of a feeling or something like that. I can't exactly translate this word. It's a like a... So sattva means a sattvic feelings, means like kind of a purity or something like that. Sattvic. Then there is rajasic, that is raja guna. That means that comes from the word raja, means king. So that is a kingly feelings, okay? And then is the tama guna, that is a tamasic feeling. That is a dark feelings, that is the dark attributes of a person. So, yeah. Dark attributes may be meat eating, sex, alcohol, everything. So the goddess is associated with the tamaguna when she is dark. But it is also, giving the importance on the tamaguna, like how the tamaguna is also important in some sense for the destruction.
The reason why I said it was the opposite is because Kali, I know, like she's like a war, like a... She's like,
and moreover,
very aggressive.
This is also a kind of racism. You know, like this is when they sometimes describe the goddess as blue, like Neil, but this is just a metaphorical description. They say that Neil, but actually they mean to say dark. Neil doesn't mean literally blue. They actually want to say dark, okay? But in a modern renditions, you will always see like goddess is painted blue because they are so uncomfortable with black goddesses, actually. So this is
they don't like the black skin
racism that has been going on.
So that's
racist. Since the colonial era, you know. Yeah, since the colonial era. Or Krishna, you will also see that the word Krishna literally means black, but he will always be painted in blue because black skin is sometimes is like, okay, so how can the god be black? Like that is a negative thing in that. Wow. So hence they will paint Krishna also blue. All right, blue.
But can I just ask this question? Because you said the opposite, and the aggressive ones are not black. But Kali was supposed to be dark skin, and she's like a war hero, like a war goddess, right? And she's very aggressive. So she's dark and she's very aggressive. You're saying maybe it's not related at all. Like maybe like they could be benevolent and dark skin, or very aggressive and dark skin.
Yeah, but sometimes it is not related. Yeah, there are multiple. Now see, sometimes the dark skin is also seen as attractive. Like Krishna, you know about Krishna. So Krishna, the word means itself black. So he is seen as an attractive god. So it is not only about the war or destructive nature, but he is like an attractive person also. So similarly, there Kali is also sometimes seen as an attractive. I mean, not attractive to us, but attractive to Shiva, her husband. So she's also seen with sexuality and all. That is also, I mean, a part of that. So yeah. So
You talked about dark feelings, and is that any way related to their color?
Yeah, and it is related because the goddess is also called Trivarna, so it means tricolored. So she has three different colored manifestations. The one is the Shukla, that is means white, so she is white skinned. Another one is the Gaura, that is fair skinned. Fair means like yellow skin, like yours. You are not white, but like a fair complexion. Another one is their Krishna. So that is the dark skin. So she has three manifestations. So these three represent three things. The white represents sattva. The fair complexion represents raja, that is the kingly things. And the dark represents the dark things, that is the tamasic things, the tamahanguna.
What are dark things?
I can't exactly say what are dark things. As I have said, violence, sex, alcohol, meat,
okay,
non-vegetarianism, all these.
So then that what I was saying originally is correct then.
All these things are associated with Kali. In fact, in tantric practices, all these things are there actually. Animal sacrifices, everything. These are considered dark things, animal sacrifices and all.
Okay, so then what I was saying originally was correct then, because that means that they're associating dark skin with violence.
No, they are associating dark skin with darkness. Now this is like
I'm not saying anything.
This is colorist, but the point is like they didn't think like that. They were thinking like this is dark, this is like, they're just associating the colors with different kind of like themes. Like okay, when I say like this is a dark era, we say like this is English speaking, like this is a dark era, we say. So is it racist? Like we are using the word dark to mean something bad. So is it racist?
Okay,
so,
let me explain myself. Okay, no, it's not racist to say that this was a dark era, but if you go three levels, they say like, oh, these ideas are dark, okay, and these guys have these ideas, and that's why their color skin is dark. Now you've gone beyond just saying these ideas are dark. You're now made a three. You pinpointed dark ideas with the dark skin. You connected dark skin with dark ideas.
These goddesses are not human beings, so they have multiple hands. They have like very weird kind of imagery.
Okay,
so they're personifications, but. Let me explain to you.
Okay, but the way I'm thinking. Okay, it's not colorist to say the dark ages. Oh, these were the dark ages. Okay, that's not colorist, right? But it would be colorist if I say the dark. I'm going to represent the Renaissance in Europe. The light that the Renaissance brought.
The fair-skinned woman.
And I'm going to represent the dark ages in Europe with a black-skinned woman, okay? So even if these representations are not real figures, I'm just like showing, oh, the Renaissance, the Age of Enlightenment, light, fair skin, white woman. The dark ages in Europe, I'm going to use a black woman as a symbol for the dark ages in Europe. Now we've gone beyond, even if these characters are fictional, I think you can see the problem here, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not saying, problem, I'm just guessing.
But here, I think that the problem is much less, because they are not saying that Kali is a negative entity. She is the mother goddess. So you are representing the mother goddess as dark. I mean, yes, I like this can have metaphorical representations, but on the other hand, this is the mother goddess, and hence I don't think, and this is the, we are worshipping the mother goddess as a dark skin goddess.
I understand that they don't see it as negative.
It is not that colorist.
I understand that.
Fact, there are other like sexually attractive women in the Mahabharata and other texts also who are described as dark complexion. So I don't think that they were ancient Indians were that much colorist in nature.
I don't think they intentionally wanted to make it seem like as if to say dark skin was bad. Okay, because I don't think they saw as being extremely violent as bad. Okay, they celebrated Kali's violence, right? But what I'm saying is that for us who see benevolence being better than violence and then associating dark skin with violence, maybe they weren't seeing it as a negative thing. You're like, yeah, dark skin and violence go hand in hand and great, we love the violence of Kali, right? But again, even just associating dark skin with violence and good idea, you know, more other ideas with white skin. I'm not saying that their intentions were bad. I'm just saying the results could be like, the result could be bad. You know what I mean? But anyways, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. So sometimes they describe that. Yeah, you are right in some sense that they describe the violent goddesses as dark complexion and more benevolent goddesses as fair complexion. But on the other hand, sometimes, as I have told you, sometimes in early descriptions, you can find that Parvati is also described as dark complexion. She is a benevolent goddess, but she is also described as dark complexion. So sometimes benevolent women are also described as dark complexion in the text, in some texts. Okay.
It's just something to explore.
Okay. So we don't have much time. So So I was where? Oh, Chanda and Munda. So the Kali, the dark goddess, comes out of her and she has all this violent imagery and she's taking out the tongue. And then she tramples all the army just by her foot. She devours them, grinds their teeth, and then elephants, horses, chariots. Am I connected still?
Yeah, you are, but you're cutting in and
chariots.
Out.
So okay.
Go through it fast. Hello. So that we can end. Yeah, you're good. You're good. Fast. Maybe turn off.
I can't hear you, actually.
Okay, let's just end this here, because we're at the end of our time. So we're cutting in your connection. Yeah, Katie is saying Renek is very roboty. So maybe this is a good place to cut it. And we could come back. Oop, we could just completely cut out then now. All right. Let me see. Sujeev is saying, Dark Age means Kali Yuga. I think Armin is right, but don't know. Even Hindus don't know what it is right. I mean, meaning, what the right meaning is. Maybe. I don't know. The echo was not my fault. The echo was because of his system. So you see, right now I have zero echo, right? Because, Katie saying, okay, I really like this guy for the most part. Oh, here he's back. Oh, let me go. Let me just quickly read this. Katie saying, okay, I really like this guy for the most part. My first disagreement would be that he seems reformation. For reformation, while I am against it, he feels like a Hindu version of Imam Tohid. All right, go on, continue. Let's do it really fast. Okay. Do final remarks.
Okay. Can I get 15 minutes? I mean, because this story will end in 15 minutes. Will end in just 15 minutes, please. Because this is, I don't want to continue it because this is just half a story. Okay. I mean, this is just going to end now, very soon. So anyway, so the Kali comes, the enraged goddess comes and devours and chews and everything. She does all these violent things. And finally, she brings the heads of the two Chanda and Munda with her and gives the original fair-skinned goddess, the Kaushiki. And hence Kaushiki names her Chamunda. So she names her Chamunda, okay, because she brings the heads of Chanda and Munda to him. Then then there is a mention to the Sapta Matrika, there is the seven mothers. So what happens is the other gods who are there, some goddesses comes out of them. So taking their form, like whatever the attributes of the god is, it is just like a female version of that god. And they come to ally with her, assist her in what can I say? this battle, and the seven mother goddesses come, and all of them like fight again, and all these things happen. Okay, and then finally there is a demon called Rakta Bija which comes. Rakta Bija means blood seeded. So this demon is a special kind, like when a blood drops on the soil, from that a clone develops.
I remember that guy.
Okay, so first of all they try to kill him, but soon Kelly an comes army in. Of clones. Clones.
Yeah. Every time you attack him, he bleeds. Every time you attack him, he bleeds, bunch of clothes. But Kelly comes, and Kelly comes, and she swipes the blood with her tongue from the ground, and she like so she he doesn't.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then Kali like starts drinking all the blood with her tongue, and then what happens is that due to the blood loss and striking of the weapons, like finally he dies. And all the seven mother goddesses and all the Kali and whatever original goddess Kaushiki, so everyone dance with joy.
Right, you're getting robot-y. Ronak, you're getting robot-y.
With blood.
You're getting robot-y. So guys, is getting robot-y for you guys as well?
Dance, okay?
Yeah, you're getting robot-y.
So... Then Ronak, themselves with their armies.
You're getting very robot-y.
Am I getting again lost?
Yeah, so we have to cut it here. Let's come back to this story.
I'm not
Yep, you're getting so robot-y. Your connection is bad.
Yeah, am I visible now?
You are cutting in and out. And people see, yes, he was robot-y, like really bad connection. Okay. Let's cut this here because your connection is bad. This is an exciting part to catch up on later, okay? Next time, because your connection is not good. Not my fault. But this Kali part is my favorite part of the story. Guys, it's really hard to follow the plot here. There's too many moving characters. You know how people complain about Game of Thrones? That there's just too many elements and some people get confused? Well, at least with Game of Thrones, there's like charts... Oh my god. I need a chart. I need a chart to make sense of all of the story. I'm not going to be able to, like, it's just too many moving parts. Oh, look, his connection is so bad, he's not even going to be able to come. There's too many moving parts. You can't just, like, know exactly who's who and what did what, you know? There needs to be, like, animation. Oh, Katie's saying, I know how he feels because the story of the Devi Mahatima is almost towards the end. Yeah, okay, but that's a good cliffhanger. Just leave it as a cliffhanger. Look, he can't even... Look, you guys see? It's like going, woo, like you can't join. Like you can see the swirly thing, right? He's not going to be able... His connection is bad. It's not even bringing him up. Yeah, but Katie... okay. You could tell us the story? No, never mind. I'm not going to read it. Oh, look at this. You know, hold on. Hussein. Oh, where's comment? Hussein's comment is going to show up soon. So I can highlight. Yeah, it's just... Oh, there we go. There we go. Yeah, I'm the Jon Snow in this story. I don't know anything. I'm like... These stories... Like, think about it, guys. If this becomes a movie... How epic is that? Like you have the enemy and Kelly is attacking her and he's bleeding and the blood drops. Like I'm imagining the Hollywood version of this and it looks so epic in my mind. Like the way I'm imagining these mythologies, like in like the way like these demons and these goddesses, they look so much better than the Indian arts that I see, like in a cinematic version of them. Like how badass these asuras could look. And the blood like drips on the ground and the blood like whoever came up with this specific story just by itself is more epic than anything I've read in the Quran, right? Like your goddess is attacking this guy and this is his blood. When his blood touch any drop that touches the ground turns into a clone version of him like that. Imagine the things that you could do with that imagery. Ronak, we have to end this here because your connection is not that good. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Armin, let me tell you one thing. There is only one line remaining in the story, so I don't want to continue it. So what happens at the end is Shumbha Nishumbha comes themselves, and then finally again terrific battle happens. Nishumbha gets killed, And finally, Shumbha says that, okay, but you are fighting in groups. You are so many of you are fighting against me. So you are fighting in groups. You are resorting to others' power. You are not fighting alone. But then she says that, okay, all of them are me only. I am only all of them. So, and all of them combined together to form one single goddess. All the mother goddesses, Kali and everything. They combine together and form one goddess, and then finally they kill the Shumbha, and finally this ends, and the gods again get their land back. So this is the ending story.
Hooray! Happy ending. But yeah, thank you, Katie is saying, I know many moderate Hindus who hate the Hindutva simply because the Hindutva is preventing Western media from adapting their mythology. They should they should learn from the Japanese. The Japanese love it when Western media takes their mythology and turns it into movies, right? I think if Indians
if the Western media makes some series on mythology, then they will be so offended. Oh my god, like they won't allow it in the country. Like
they should be honored. They should be so
happy. And you know, there was a Ramayan series, like I think you should watch that. That was an anime, basically Ramayan. Okay, I think I don't know if you have seen that. That is a very beautiful one. Okay, there is no mockery or anything. Yeah, the Japanese one. Yeah. It's a very beautiful one. Like I saw it in childhood. It was Hindi dubbed, but it was so beautiful. Okay. There was a faction of the society that was so offended with this. That how can a Japanese guy make a Ramayan? And then they banned it from the country and all these things happened. I don't know. Like what kind of logic is that? Why can't a Japanese guy make a Ramayan? I don't know.
Okay. Katie saying the Hindutva recently attacked the manga for adapting Shiva and Durga Kelly and Prabhupada. Well, we're gonna make our own version of these. As well, Atheist. By the way, guys, we have our own version of art coming, a lot of it, so support us on Patreon. Once we hit 200 patrons, we're gonna have our own art like once every week. Okay, cool. All right, cool. Finally, your connection got better at the end, so you could manage to finish the story. Yeah. Is there like a chart that I could refer to so I could know exactly which god is where and which battle happened at what time and who which god was came? There needs to be a chart.
I have to create that then. If you want to see a philosophical image, then I can show you one form of a goddess. I'm not going to discuss the origins.
No, see, like a lot of people were complaining about Game of Thrones about there's too many characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to keep track.
But I don't know.
But then there's maps, there's charts. You can see how everyone is related. You can see people's previous history. A religion as old as Hinduism, how is it that charts so easily for people to refer to doesn't yet exist? Like, we should make that. Atheist Republic should make a chart like that and make it available. Yeah, but what do you think, Rona? Can we make a chart like that and then refer to it, and then that way,
refer to it in some cases. Like, what you want exactly? That is important. For what purpose the chart?
So which god came to?
For example, the Deva Devi Mahatmya chart we can make.
Yeah. So here's the thing: the chart should show which god comes from one god and how the creation story of each god and how they're connected, right? And then next to each line, there needs to be the Vedas or the Gita or whatever the story comes from, like the scripture, right? And then also the battles and the stories that they're involved in. You know, there should be a website, that is interactive.
One thing in Hinduism is that you can't connect all the books. This is again told, suppose in Bible there are four gospels, right? So you can't connect all the four gospels to form one gospel because the four gospel stories are slightly different. And in India, there are several books and all of them tell different stories. You can't, if you combine them, it will become, it will be full of contradictions because these are different stories actually.
That's why you need more, that's why you need charts, because that would be, it's so complicated that with a chart like that, you could based on this,
but in this book it is told like that, so
yeah it would be on the chart I think there needs to be a website where it's interactive, you click on a line and then it shows the creation, a short clip will show the creation of that god, and then you click on a battle, then it shows Kali killing this guy, then you should why is this not a thing? There's a billion Hindus out there and there's how is this not a thing yet?
Yeah
okay, make that a thing. All right. Anyways, Are you gonna make your own YouTube channel or something that we could promote?
But me?
Yeah.
No, I don't have my own YouTube channel as of yet.
If you ever
actually,
do make it,
I don't have that much time also, like, to do YouTube now.
Well, thank you for sharing your time with us. Sorry if it's hard for me to. I'm gonna spend more time understanding the story so I could like know exactly what you're referring to. But I'm sorry if it's like this is called the curse of knowledge, like because you've been growing up with these stories, so it's like it's so apparent for you that I should get it. But obviously, it's like the names are very foreign to me.
Yeah, and the names are complicated, actually.
Yeah,
I think the names are even complicated for some Indians. Like, even the Indians who are not that much familiar with complicated Sanskrit words and all. I mean, and if they're completely alien, even for Indians, the names are complicated. Some of the names.
Okay, but I'm gonna like slowly become more familiar with it because I don't want to like. I feel like you were disappointed with my understanding of your story a little bit, but I don't want to disappoint you.
No,
so
no,
I'm gonna try.
I understand that. Obviously, I mean. Person who doesn't, I mean, who is listening it for the first time, I mean, for him, it is a bit difficult to understand the stories because.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to try my best because it's interesting stories. It's fun. I just need more visual aid. All right.
Yeah,
okay,
and I just want to mention one last thing. So this is about the inclusion of different kinds of things in the Hindu society. So in Bengal, what happens that the goddess, I mean, the idol of the goddess that is prepared. So there is a ritual that in the soil from which.
Ooh, he was gonna make his last point.
You make the idol with that soil. You need
to. Wait, you got cut. Sorry. You need to go back. You need to go back. You got cut.
Have I gone out?
You're back now. Say it again. Say it fast before you get cut again. Oopsie, you didn't say it fast, and now you got cut again. All right, bring it. All right, make your last point very fast before you get cut again.
So yeah, so they mix the, that's the point, they mix the soil from a brothel in the, I mean, soil with which they make the idol, the goddess idol. They want to include, they want to say that the goddess is the representative of the feminine. So the prostitute is also, I mean, what can I say? The feminine is not complete without them. They want to represent the complete femininity. So the prostitutes may be socially somewhat unacceptable, but they want to include, I mean, her also in the form of the goddess, because the goddess is the ultimate representative. And hence they mix the soil from a brothel in the soil.
I don't understand.
Brothel, that is a prostitute house.
A brothel. Okay. The soil from a brothel, they make a goddess from the soil of a brothel to represent prostitutes?
No, I mean, they say that the soil is Lokhi Mati or the auspicious soil. They say that the soil of a brothel is auspicious. Now, why they say it, there are multiple explanations maybe, but they just do it. That is the thing they do. They don't
make understand. I have no idea what you just said. They get the soil from the brothel and what does happen? A god
comes
from
mix
there?
They just mix it slightly with the soil from which they're making the idol of the goddess.
Oh, to do what? To be
inclusive? To do what, I don't know. But they say that the soil of a brothel is auspicious in some sense. Now there are multiple explanations for why it is auspicious. Some people say that those who go to the visit the brothel, they leave their auspiciousness there and all this. Like, I don't know. There are multiple oral traditional explanations. But I don't know. I mean, I think the main reason was to include everyone. I mean, it was to give the prostitutes some kind of social status. I mean, so that the people don't despise.
So that's exactly
them.
What I said. They make from the soil of the brothel, they make a god, like they make an idol to be inclusive to prostitutes. That's what I said.
And the goddess, they want to say that the goddess is there in the prostitutes also, because the goddess is a feminine representation of the feminine. So the prostitutes also have the god. I mean, goddess-like thing in them. They are also the human representative of goddess. So
I like that. See, I like that. See, Paz, they're trying to support of sex workers. That's great. That's beautiful. Something good.
Yeah, because
that's
the society
great.
May despise them, but it is showing that, but how can I say, we should be inclusive towards them. That is the main idea maybe behind this tradition. And I like that tradition actually, in some sense.
Okay, cool. All right, let's end the stream here. Guys, subscribe to... Oh, this is being... Guys, no, before you go, I'm going to tell everybody that we streamed this on my personal channel, Armin Navabi, but then we're going to upload it on Atheist Republic. So consider, if you're watching this on Atheist Republic, consider subscribing to my own personal channel as well, Armin Navabi, link in the description, if you're watching this on Atheist Republic. Anyways, thank you, guys. Bye. Hold on. Just stay here. Wait, don't go. Don't go.